Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Yesterday, undocumented youth, the wider immigrant community, and their allies took to the streets across the country after Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced that Donald Trump will end DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. DACA protects a young generation of immigrants brought to the United States by their parents. It allows them to apply for temporary work permits and social security numbers and shields them from deportation. Almost 800,000 youth are enrolled in DACA, including 200,000 from California. State Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon said the Democratic-controlled state legislature will do everything it can to keep these young people secure, safe, and here where they belong. President Obama signed an executive order to create DACA in 2012 after then-Speaker John Boehner killed immigration reform following many years of activism and debate. So where does it stand now? Well, Congress has about 6 months to pass legislation, and two bipartisan bills could grant DACA recipients legal status or create a pathway to citizenship. The question is, will politicians act in time? One of today's guests, Kevin Johnson, believes that by eliminating DACA, Trump is giving Congress an historic opportunity for immigration reform. He says this is a chance for lawmakers to enact more profound immigration reform that is fair, enforceable, and lives up to the nation's ideals. Such reform is just what the country needs in these troubled times. Kevin Johnson is dean of the UC Davis School of Law. He's also professor of public interest law and Chicano studies at UC Davis. Dean Johnson has published extensively on immigration law and civil rights. His latest book is Immigration Law and the U.S.-Mexico Border. He blogs at Immigration Prof and is a regular contributor on immigration on SCOTUS blog. And Dean Kevin Johnson joins us by phone from UC Davis. Hi, Dean Johnson. Welcome to the show. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us. We're also joined by Eileen Truax. Eileen met with Dreamers just yesterday, and they also believe this is an opportunity for real comprehensive immigration reform. Eileen Truax is a freelance journalist who covers migration, politics, and U.S.-Mexico relations. She's the author of Dreamers, An Immigrant Generation's Fight for Their American Dream. Eileen's two forthcoming books are about how Mexicans are responding to Donald Trump and how the United States keeps out asylum seekers from Mexico, Central America, and beyond. And Eileen Truax joins us from Los Angeles. Hi, Eileen. Welcome back to the show, and thank you for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much.
We're also joined by Mariana Magana. She's 22. She graduated from UCLA 2 years ago. Mariana came to the United States when she was just one. Obama announced the DACA program just one day after she graduated from high school in 2012, and she immediately applied. Mariana helps undocumented students in her hometown of Santa Monica, and she's currently applying for grad school to study the relationships between law enforcement and people of color, especially immigrants. And Mariana Magana joins us from Sacramento. Hi, Mariana. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, I want to start off with you, Mariana, because there's a lot of disinformation out there. Trump just tweeted again last night about DACA. Tell us exactly what this announcement means and what are you talking to Dreamers about? Because I know that there's a lot of confusion out there right now.
Right. I think right now the most important thing, having met with Dreamers yesterday, specifically right after the announcement, having, you know, attended protests later throughout the evening, there was a lot of fear regardless as to whether their permits were still valid, you know, as in yesterday or tomorrow. The way that we have been approaching this is just connecting and disseminating the information that has been produced by reliable community organizations as well as, you know, other organizations throughout the country. These include, like, United We Dream, the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, National Immigration Law Center, you know, these really wide-known organizations throughout the U.S. to provide accurate information and really inform them that, you know, if you have a permit right now, it is still valid until the expiration date, and the rights that come along with that, right? Also, the whole aspect of if your permit expires before March 5th, 2018, you must apply for renewal before October 5th, 2017, and really ensuring that they're well aware of these dates and well aware, prepared and ready to be able to file that application and submit on time so they have 2 more years of employment authorization here in the U.S.
What happens to people who, say, want to apply today? Can they apply still? That's kind of confusing, because at first the decision said no, and then according to an article about Trump's tweets, it said yes, they can apply.
So far, from what we have read on the memo that was released by Department of Homeland Security, they will not be taking any initial applications. So if this is a first-time applicant, you are no longer able to apply for DACA. That's what we have gotten so far from, you know, all the information we have gone through. But that's why we're still trying to, you know, inform people so that they don't go through the process and they don't file this expensive fee and end up, you know, getting rejected for their deferred action application.
Eileen Truax, you were meeting with Dreamers yesterday. Can you talk about those conversations? Is there some confusion going around? Do people understand what is actually happening right now?
Well, the kind of meeting that Dreamers held yesterday, and this is a practice that I've seen during these years that I've been following them, every time we have a situation similar like this, it's just to call to a meeting, to be together, and they start by sharing how they feel and what are they thinking. And I think this is an important part, because these spaces give them the opportunity to share that they're afraid, in disbelief, angry. Some of them have this kind of deja vu feeling. It's all over again. We cannot leave this. And after sharing that, and this is a process that happens very fast, because in 3 hours, you can see them going from this trying to understand what they are feeling to trying to plan what are they going to do. So yesterday in that meeting, they were talking obviously about the information that was just shared, what's going to happen next, what are the specific regulations of this announcement, but also what should be the strategy in the midterm. And one of the things that they were sharing there, and I think it's very interesting to consider, is that most of the mobilizations that we saw in the streets from activists were asking to defend DACA, to keep DACA in place. And, of course, that's something that they would want. But they were saying also that we should understand that DACA is something that was need to be temporary, that doesn't solve their immigration status, doesn't give a residency or a pass to citizenship, and that they feel that they deserve more than that. Mm. So they were asking, should we just stay in this narrative of defending DACA and keep what they are giving us so far with the permanent risk that it can be taken away? Or should we use this opportunity to push for something more, for a real Dream Act, for a real piece of legislation that solves the situation permanently? And even more, asking for a regular situation for the whole community, because it's not worth for many of them to know that they're safe if they know that this night they can come back to their home and one of their parents can be deported. Mm. So that's the kind of situation that they're discussing right now.
Dean Johnson, that's one of the main points you make in your latest op-ed. You argue that by eliminating DACA, Donald Trump is giving Congress an historic opportunity for real comprehensive immigration reform.
I think that's right, and don't read me wrong. I don't think that DACA is unconstitutional or should have been repealed, but I do think that at this point in time, where you have members of Congress, including Republican members of Congress, criticizing the president's dismantling of DACA, we do have a historical moment where we hopefully can look soberly and thoughtfully and rationally at immigration reform and what might best be done for the nation as a whole, for undocumented immigrants, for the DACA recipients, for all U.S. citizens.
Mariana, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that this does give Congress an opportunity to pass real immigration reform? And when we're specifically talking about young students like yourself, what would you like to see?
I definitely agree with that statement. I think like Dean Johnson was mentioning, it's that 6-month period that Trump mentioned is really the 6-month period that we as community activists, people who are on the ground, really are going to have to continue pushing and fighting and really reminding the legislators in Washington D.C. that what we want is an inclusive comprehension immigration reform. We are seen as the quote-unquote ideal immigrant in this country, but we truly deserve something better, not simply for us, but also for our parents and our community at large who has been here, you know, for a while, and many of these people were not included in the DACA program. So I think it is definitely an open opportunity, but we're going to have to keep on pressuring and really keep on fighting and not settle down with what we have so far.
Kevin Johnson, we're just getting word. CNN is reporting that congressional Democrats are demanding a standalone vote on a solution for DACA, threatening to logjam the fall sessions if they don't get one. What are your thoughts on that approach?
Well, I do think that getting some kind of immediate relief for the people fearing loss of DACA benefits would be important. I'm not a politician, so I'm not really in a position to say what would work best in Congress. But I do think that people, including the Democrats, are realizing the incredible fear in the DACA community about the future, and that fear is made worse by the fact that President Trump at various times has spoken well of DACA recipients and spoken poorly of DACA recipients, has spoken well of undocumented immigrants and spoken poorly of undocumented immigrants. The uncertainty, the fear, and in some ways I would say the terror facing the undocumented community is really palpable and something I've never seen in the state. And I lived through Proposition 187 in California when it was sort of a dark time in terms of immigration law, but this is something different, so I can understand why some members of Congress are taking a very tough approach to try to protect these very vulnerable people from a cruel measure.
It's important also to add context here, because Donald Trump began his campaign by calling Mexicans rapists, and I hate to bring that up all the time, but it's important to talk about that. He also talked about building that wall. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, and he also pardoned Joe Arpaio, right, who violated Latino mm-hmm. civil rights, including the rights of U.S. citizens as well as immigrants, on a mass basis for a number of years, and said that he was going to continue to do so. So I do think it's right to point to the context. You have a president who has demonized immigrants, who has adopted a number of policies, including executive orders that are designed to be tough on immigration enforcement, who is said again and again that he's going to build a wall and is going to force Mexico to pay for the wall. Unfortunately, those words have impacts on communities, the fear of deportation is, President Obama deported an awful lot of immigrants, but the fear of deportation under this president is even greater, in part because it's uncertain who might be subject to deportation, what rules apply, whether you can drop your child off at school and possibly risk deportation. The fear now is very different, and the fear is in part a result of the words and actions of this administration.
Mariana, can you speak to that? When you think about the fear and the rhetoric and pardoning Arpaio, the list just goes on. How does that affect you and the dreamers that you work with?
Right. I think prior to DACA, I was in a stage where I was always uncertain of what was next, right? I didn't know what I was going to do post-graduation, whether after college working would be a reality. I think when DACA came, there was a sense of hope. There was a sense of alleviation from the stress and anxiety that came along with being undocumented in this country. But I think after the Trump was elected to office back in November and, started in January, there was that fear kind of came back. Even though we had DACA, like Gene Johnson was mentioning, there was still an uncertainty with the executive orders released in January where, the mass criminalization of the undocumented immigrant in this country, a lot of that came back, even despite having DACA and having the quote-unquote protection from deportation. We were still seeing DACA recipients being picked up on the streets and being held, even though they had this quote-unquote protection from the government.
Eileen Truax, you met with Dreamers yesterday. You wrote an entire book about Dreamers. Can you talk about the fear and how that's really changed under Donald Trump?
I can tell you that, as it was just mentioned, part of that fear is the uncertainty that who is going to be subject of deportation or to be arrested Rules are not clear during this administration, and that's part of the fear. But I think we have to remember something. DACA was in effect for 5 years, but the first version of the DREAM Act was introduced in 2001. There are youth that are veterans in this fight that have been organizing, going to the Congress to lobby, talking to representatives, talking to the media for 10 years. If DACA is removed, they are going to be back in a situation that they have been before. If they fear, this is the fear that they have feel before. They know what the situation is. Most of them grew up knowing that risk, knowing that fear for themselves, for their families. Some of them have family relatives who have been deported. So this is not a new situation. And although, of course, there's fear, there's also a knowledge about how to manage this. I can tell you, during these years, you can see a very strong evolution and growth of this Dreamer community. They have been very good organizing. Mm-hmm. When we were talking about Dreamers 5-6 years ago, we were talking about people who were asking for certain things, people who, from journalism, you will go to interview to have their life experiences. 6 years later, 8 years later, we are talking to them because they're part of the staff of politicians during the campaign. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders had DACA beneficiaries as part of their staff. Mm. They are going into political positions. They have wrong. And I think that, yes, of course, there's fear, but they have a wide experience, and they're trying to remind this to each other during this time because they have been prepared before, and certainly they are prepared now.
Eileen Truax is a freelance journalist who covers migration politics and U.S.-Mexico relations. She's the author of Dreamers, an immigrant generation's fight for their American dream. Kevin Johnson is dean of the UC Davis Law School, professor of public interest law and Chicana-Chicano studies at UC Davis. He has published extensively on immigration law and civil rights. His latest book is Immigration Law and the U.S.-Mexico Border. We're also joined by Mariana Magana. She's 22, graduated from UCLA 2 years ago. She came to the United States when she was just one. Obama announced the DACA program just 1 day after Mariana graduated from high school, and she immediately applied. Now she helps undocumented students in her hometown of Santa Monica, and she's applying for grad school to study the relationships between law enforcement and people of color, especially immigrants. And if you'd like to join us, what was your reaction to Trump's decision yesterday to end the DACA program? A lot of people are asking, what about the timing, as so many parts of Texas are underwater? There's 800,000 students or young people who are part of the DACA program. The most are here in California, about 200,000. And then the second largest group is in Texas. And the New York Times had a piece yesterday about how so many Dreamers have lost their homes. And now they have to deal with the uncertainty around DACA. I hope you can check out this story. They profiled Aracely Martinez Ramirez, whose home has rotted like so many. And she says, why would they take DACA away? She's just 20. What did we ever do wrong to him? So what are your thoughts about the timing of this, about how this has been going down? And then what do you think about our guest's argument that this is now an opportunity to push Congress to pass comprehensive immigration reform? If you're a DACA recipient, we'd love to hear from you. If you work with DACA recipients, if you work in education, you probably know DACA recipients. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Dean Kevin Johnson, what are your thoughts about the timing of all of this? Stands out for you?
Actually, what stands out to me about the timing is how long it took President Trump to take this action. I had feared that since he had campaigned on DACA being unconstitutional, that he would, soon after he was sworn in, eliminate DACA. I think the fact that he took, you know, well over 6 months to, you know, slowly dismantle it, shows that there's certainly a great deal of political support for the program, and that there were some members of the administration that were supportive of the program, and we've heard rumors of that. I think it also tells you something that his heart wasn't as much into this as you might think, because he didn't announce this himself. He delegated to the Attorney General to make the announcement. I have no reason to think that DACA was dismantled, because or anything involving the hurricane. It's certainly bad timing in adding insult to injury for the poor folks in that region, including DACA recipients in that region who have to try to reconstruct their life as well as their home at this point in time. But to me, the most surprising thing is that it took so long for President Trump to do this.
What do you think, Eileen? What's surprising to you?
I'm sorry?
What would you add to that? What's most surprising about this decision and the timing around it?
Yes. No, I agree with Kevin. Definitely, we have seen that President Trump has used the immigration subject when he wants to distract the attention, either when it's about the wall in the border or when it's about immigrants or Mexicans. It comes when something else is happening. I agree. Now we have the situation in Texas. We have all the situation with white supremacist groups. And we had recent polls showing that President Trump was losing popularity among his community. So this, of course, is a good opportunity for him to just reassure his presence on his base. I think that since the first moment, since Trump took oath in January, the immigrant community was waiting for something like this. It was just about time. We didn't know what kind of time. So in certain way, the community was prepared. What to me is something to pay attention to is, as Kevin just mentioned, the fact that it was Sessions, the person doing the announcement. The fact that this comes from the Attorney General, to me, sends a message that this is a subject, a matter that has something to do with the Department of Justice instead of ICE, of the Department of Homeland Security. And that kind of narrative is, I think, it has the purpose to make look this youth and immigrants as criminals. When you ask the Attorney General to address this issue, you are framing this into the criminalization narrative. We are not talking here about social justice. We are not talking here about human rights. We are talking about the law. We are talking about the Constitution. For some people, I mean, it would be good to remember that the law allows an executive action like the one that Obama did, what DACA is, but also that President Trump has used these executive actions several times, including the recent pardon to Arpaio. So it's a combination of factors that certainly has the intention to make one or more political statements besides the simple fact of removing DACA. Mm-hmm.
Mariana Magana, before we let you go, what else do you want people to know about Dreamers? Again, we're talking about almost 800,000 among the highest, the number of people who came here with their families. Mexico, biggest country of origin, followed by El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. Do you know, when you look at Dreamers, are most of their parents undocumented, or does it?
When it comes to that, it honestly varies. Mm. I know many Dreamers who themselves are undocumented, but their parents have already acquired status here in the United States. The immigration system is so complex and so difficult to navigate that without the adequate and the appropriate and the right legal representation, sometimes these undocumented youth don't know what legal remedy could or could not be afforded to them. I think right now for us being called Dreamers, I think right now we're really focused on kind of dismantling that narrative as well, and really dismantling the good versus bad immigrant narrative that we have going on at the moment. Yeah. We really want to try to be inclusive of our parents and, the other members of the community who, a lot of them were the ones who fought for DACA, who, you know, fought for this executive order that came from the community. It did not come from day to night from President Obama. It was something that was fought for multiple years. And we always knew that DACA was temporary. And as Eileen mentioned, we knew this was coming. It was just a matter of timing and when and how and the conditions that it was going to fall under.
Can you tell us how you're planning in the coming months to take on that good versus bad immigrant, you know, narrative that we hear? I've also just over the last few days heard about how, you know, this person is, you know, as American as apple pie. I mean, you hear that too. It's almost like you have to prove how American you are. How what are your plans over the next couple months?
We're trying to just simply humanize this issue, right? I think immigration is often seen as, you know, the papers, the social security, the documentation. But at the end of the day, we're really trying to see the red areas of no human being is illegal regardless of where you're at. There's the danger of kind of stating like these youth were brought here by their parents with no fault of their own, right? But then at the same time, that's criminalizing our parents for taking an action just to simply provide food and water on our table. So we really want to be aware that we put that narrative out there, because I think dividing the immigrant community into the good and the bad immigrant and who's ideal and who's worthy of obtaining documents in this country is of great danger and is only going to further divide the movement here.
And as you said, everybody has a different story, but some of the comments I've been reading, especially from moms who brought their kids over 15, 20 years ago, said, yes, we did it so we could put food on the table.
I mean, that's essentially, you know, the one of the largest motives. When you don't have basic bread, basic necessities at home, you are not going to wait, you know, 20 to 23 years or whatever the wait time is in your hometown to immigrate to the United States, right? It's a human right to be able to have access to these resources. And I can speak for my family, that's why we came from Mexico, because, you know, there was no job opportunity, there was no basic necessities and basic resources to survive.
Yep, and a lot of this is connected to U.S. policies, and the documentary Harvest of Empire by Juan Gonzalez really goes into that. Well, Mariana, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll definitely check in with you in the coming months.
Perfect. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. That is Mariana Magana. She's 22, graduated from UCLA 2 years ago. She came here when she was just one. Obama announced the DACA program 1 day after she graduated from high school. She immediately applied, and now she's applying for grad school to study the relationship between law enforcement and people of color, especially immigrants. Coming up after the break, we'll continue our conversation about DACA with Eileen Truax, author of Dreamers, An Immigrant Generation's Fight for Their American Dream, and Kevin Johnson, Dean of the UC Davis School of Law and author of Immigration Law and the U.S.-Mexico Border. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, local public radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with the nation's John Nichols about his new book, Horsemen of the Trump-ocalypse, a field guide to the most dangerous people in America. He says Trump has assembled a rogues gallery of alt-right hate mongers, crony capitalists, immigrant bashers, and climate change deniers. He says that people need to spend a lot more attention looking at Donald Trump's inner circle. How should they be challenged? That is tomorrow. And then on Friday, we'll have a conversation with Suad McKennett, a journalist, about her new book, I Was Told to Come Alone, My Journey Behind the Lines of Jihad. And if you'd like to join us today, we're talking about the future of DACA and immigrants in the United States. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Eileen Truax, author of Dreamers and Immigrant Generations Fight for Their American Dream. She has two forthcoming books almost out, one about Mexicans responding to Donald Trump, another one about how the U.S. keeps out asylum seekers from Mexico, Central America, and beyond. Kevin Johnson is dean of the UC Davis School of Law, professor of public interest law and Chicano studies at UC Davis. His latest book is Immigration Law and the U.S.-Mexico Border. Dean Johnson, we were talking earlier about how Donald Trump started his campaign talking about building the wall, saying that Mexicans are rapists, appointing Jeff Sessions to be his attorney general, pardoning Joe Arpaio. We did a show about that on Friday. We're in a different environment now with a lot of right-wing media, a lot of right-wing media online, a very strong anti-immigrant sentiment in this country. Can you talk about the changes that you're seeing and how you think the immigrant community and their allies should respond to that?
Well, I think that we are seeing a different kind of dialogue than we've seen in the past. And President Trump, when he was campaigning, helped change that tenor of the dialogue by expressly mentioning Mexicans as criminals, Mexicans as rapists, equating Muslims with terrorists. And in the way he would put it, he was moving away from political correctness and speaking the truth. But it was a distinct change from our previous discussions of immigration, where people would talk about aliens or illegal aliens and use some kinds of code when you're talking about particular groups. He's contributed to making the debate more harsh, more coarse, more focused, and in a way demonizing immigrants in ways that I don't think are very well deserved. I think the antidote to that, and I think we heard a few minutes ago how we might approach it, is emphasizing the humanity of the people affected by the laws, the humanizing immigrants, humanizing the undocumented. And one of the things that is often lost in the debate is the very human consequences of these very complex immigration laws and policies. I mean, we have a situation now where there are roughly in the neighborhood of 300,000 or 400,000 removals a year. That affects families, communities, churches, employers. It can tear families apart. We have a situation now with an increasingly militarized border, where we have a death a day, at least, along the U.S.-Mexico border, people dying, trying to make their way to the United States, dying in the desert of heat and lack of water. And I think that we often, unfortunately, don't realize the very human consequences of the very real legal policies that this president says should be enforced with impunity, without discretion, and in the harshest of terms.
It's such a good point. There are so many elements to this. There's been a lot of really great reporting on what happens after someone is deported. I mean, that's obviously a different conversation, but it's important to bring it up just briefly. Alfredo Corchado with the Dallas Morning News had an amazing story about what happens when people are deported and land in Nuevo Laredo. And what happens is they're being kidnapped, and gangs are finding out where they worked, who they were with here in the United States, and then they're demanding a ransom. I mean, this is happening right now as people are being deported from the U.S.
It's very sad, the human trafficking, the criminal element that's involved in all this. The truth of the matter is border enforcement has these collateral consequences that often aren't paid attention to by many people. I mean, you increase border enforcement, for example, and then you increase incentives for human traffickers and smugglers to charge money for people coming to this country, and then to exploit and sometimes victimize the poor people who are trying to come to the United States. Very little time and effort is put into human realities like that, and much more effort and attention paid to things like build a wall.
Right. Eileen, the PBS NewsHour also followed people who were deported to Mexico. Hardly any family members. They don't have connections there. And in some cases, they have to sleep in cemeteries. They have nowhere to sleep. I mean, these are very important stories to add to this conversation, to, as Dean Johnson said, to add the human element to all of this.
But of course, and I think that we have not talked very much about this. And I saw the story that Alfredo Korchel published. It's a fantastic story. But he is talking about an extreme case, someone who was a victim of the crime violence that Mexico has in some of the regions. But a person who is deported doesn't have to fall in one of those events to have a very, very bad time, a difficult time, and sometimes to not be able to rebuild their life. We have not spoke enough about the responsibility of the countries of origin of these people. In the specific case of dreamers, almost 80% of them are coming from Mexico, and the Mexican government has not taken any real measures to receive and to reincorporate people who are going back to the country, and specifically people who left when they were minors. The case of Mariana, who was just with us, she came to the U.S. when she was 1 year old. I wonder what she feels when people say, go back to your country. What country are you talking about? You don't even have a picture in your mind about that country. And in my book about dreamers, I have a chapter mentioning a story like this. It's about Nancy Landa, a young woman who came to the U.S. when she was 9 years old, and at 29, she was deported to Tijuana in one day. So in the morning, she was leaving her apartment, going to work, and by 8 p.m., she was in Tijuana with just the clothes on her back, $20 in the pocket, not speaking the language, not knowing anyone, not having family in Mexico, and not having an authority in Mexico to go to ask for help. That's a situation that we have to see also, and we have to start to cover. Right now, we are wondering what could happen to dreamers who lose protection of DACA right now and might be deported. But right now, while we are talking, there's about 500,000, I'm going to repeat that number, 500,000 young people who have been deported from the U.S. to Mexico in the past decade. And we don't know much about them because there was no DACA, because they're just deported, and we don't follow those stories. And the government and the Mexican society have not been able to fully reincorporate them. Things so basic like giving them an ID to start looking for a place to live, looking for a job, and things more complex like revalidating their studies. They graduate here in the U.S., and there's no way to revalidate that in Mexico, just to mention a couple of things.
Eileen Truax is a freelance journalist who covers these issues. She's author of Dreamers, An Immigrant Generation's Fight for Their American Dream. Kevin Johnson is dean of the UC Davis School of Law and author of Immigration Law and the U.S.-Mexico Border. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts about the decision to end DACA? If you are a DACA recipient or you work with any young immigrants, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Philip in Brisbane. Hi, Philip. Welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you. I'm responding to the portion that I just heard about the collateral problems that come with deportation, and I have personal experience with a child who was victimized both here and in El Salvador by gangs, people in the same gang, and it was completely nothing to do with anything except that this child was wearing a certain color of jacket, and they that caused a lot of problems, and that there were further complications. Now the point is, when people are victimized by the criminal element after they are deported, does that not present some protection under the law? Is that not a consideration, or at this point, does the law generally turn a blind eye to those considerations?
Thank you, Philip. Dean Johnson, do you want to take that one?
I'm not sure that I quite follow it, but I'm not sure that the law focuses on that as much as it could or should. And so it may be unfortunate, but I think it's a reality.
We're going to do a show in the coming months about this issue. There was a documentary that was made specifically about young people who are coming to the U.S. from South and Central America. Dean Johnson, we're hearing a lot about the legality behind DACA. Can you talk about that? What stands out for you just about what we're hearing from, for example, Attorney General Jeff Sessions and whether or not this is constitutional?
Well, I mean, the basic argument is DACA is basically the equivalent of a law passed by Congress, and the president can't pass laws. It should have been Congress's power to pass. The alternative way of looking at it is, DACA was kind of like a form of prosecutorial discretion, basically a regulation that says we're not going to try to deport these law-abiding young people who came to the United States because their parents brought them here. So there's this, you know, sort of very different view of the law and whether there was infringement on Congress's power. The truth of the matter is that after DACA was announced in 2012, there were a number of lawsuits that were brought, including one even by Sheriff Joe Arpaio, challenging DACA and its legality, and those lawsuits went nowhere. And so DACA was not ever struck down by a court, never found to be unconstitutional. Now, another program, the Deferred Action for Parents of Americans, that was announced in November 2014, was found by a district court in the Southern District of Texas to violate the separation of powers. And that case made its way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court was tied 4-4. It was deadlocked about the case. At the time, Justice Scalia had recently died and not been replaced, so they only had 8 justices. But I think there's a very strong argument that DACA was and it is constitutional. It's never been struck down by a court. And as President Obama, former President Obama, said yesterday, we should recognize that the decision made by the Trump administration really isn't a legal decision. It's a political decision, and it's a political decision made by the president to try to appeal to certain elements of the Republican Party, the same elements that he gave a speech to in Phoenix not that long ago, right before he pardoned Joe Arpaio.
Eileen Truax, remind us what was happening right before Obama signed this executive order in 2012. There was years of debate and activism on the streets, and then Speaker John Boehner killed immigration reform. He basically said, we're not going to vote on it.
Yes, I think the reaction of Obama implementing DACA was as well some political statement just to show that he could do any effort to either pass the DREAM Act or an immigration reform. And, you know, what has been happening during the recent years with the immigrant community and with immigration legislation is that this is something that in politics is used to negotiate. That's what we are seeing right now with DACA and with DREAM Act. And that's what we have seen in the past. And to be fair, I don't see many differences between the two political parties because immigrants are always something that you can negotiate with and on. And yes, it was a hard time before 2012, first with the most recent debate and discussions in Congress about DREAM Act. That was the last time that the legislation was presented in Congress, and it didn't pass. And after that, the new initiative about immigration reform. But there's something that I want to mention here, because I think we can find there one of the reasons why things may be different this time. In the past, when we were discussing immigration reform, and very specifically DREAM Act, the arguments in favor of that were supposing that it was a hypothesis that if we incorporate young undocumented people to the economic apparatus in the U.S., to the economic market, if we give them jobs, if we allow them to go to school, it's going to be good from the economic perspective. for the U.S. And we were supposing that, and that was the argument. But after DACA, we do have facts about this. DACA allowed them for 5 years to actually work legally, to actually have access to higher education. Some of them even were able to buy a car, to buy a house. They paid more taxes. They were incorporated to the economic activity in the country. And now we have numbers. On October, the Center for American Progress published a study that shows that out of the almost 800,000 beneficiaries of DACA, 95% are either working or going to the university or both. Those who work are earning almost 50% more than they used to earn, and 6% of them have started small businesses. So not only they are not filling jobs, but they are creating jobs. So now we have actual facts, actual numbers, to present an argument that this legislation is not only a matter of human rights or social justice. It should be enough, but for some people it's not. Okay, now we have the economic argument. That has changed since that moment, and I think this gives a new opportunity to the debate.
Eileen Truax is author of Dreamers, An Immigrant Generation's Fight for Their American Dream. Kevin Johnson is dean of the UC Davis Law School and author of Immigration Law in the U.S.-Mexico Border. And now I would like to welcome Juan Prieto to the show. Juan graduated from UC Berkeley in May. Huge congrats, Juan. Last time you were on, you were in school. Juan was a student staff member of the Undocumented Students Program, a core member of the RISE Program, Rising Immigrant Scholars Through Education Program. Hi, Juan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Juan, talk a little bit about how your community in Berkeley is doing. What was the reaction? It wasn't surprising, but what was the reaction yesterday?
Yeah, I think it was a lot of mixed reactions. I think Mariana was highlighting earlier the sort of distinction that we need to make moving forward, that we don't sort of classify a good immigrant and bad immigrant. And so there's a lot of those conversations happening with the student population. I think a lot of us are starting to realize that we're only just afraid of going back into the shadows, the same shadows that we left 10.2 million undocumented people in. Mm. And so moving forward, taking that into account, that DACA was a Band-Aid solution, that many fell through its cracks. There was a lot of undocumented students who didn't qualify for these sort of very abstract dates that limited their ability to receive the benefits of DACA. And so I think there's conversations about being more holistic in our approach to encompass more undocumented people, if not all 11 million of us, in those conversations moving forward.
As it stands, according to the Department of Homeland Security, there were 106,000 DACA requests pending as of August 20th.
It's really frustrating, to say the least, that, you know, we sort of realized very early on that DACA was the sort of unstable ground on which we stood. It never was meant to be the end goal of the immigrant rights movement. But what ended up happening was two different things. On the one hand, it gave people the ability to work and support their families in ways that we weren't able to before, and, you know, treated as a human being in the workforce. And on the other hand, it created a lot of complacency. It created a lot of disconnection from the reality of being undocumented when it removed the fear that even though some of our families still face those fears day to day, somehow we stopped fighting in the sort of masses that we were fighting for before DACA. It's really frustrating that it's gone, but it makes sense. It makes complete sense. It was mentioned earlier how it's a political move, and I completely agree. It's a very strategic political move from the current administration.
Juan, do you agree with our other guests that this gives Congress an opportunity for comprehensive immigration reform?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of energy being sort of created from this frustration that a lot of young undocumented people are feeling, and that, again, that realization that we're just going back into the shadows, right? We're being pushed back into the same shadows that we left so many people in. And remembering what that's like should inspire us to fight for everyone again. And so, yeah, I do think that we should be striving for more. I also do think that there's a lot of fear, especially from younger people who never lived without DACA. Mm-hmm. Some of us are a bit older and lived in this country without DACA. And so we kind of understand how to navigate and exist within the shadows. A lot of younger people might be more inclined to support things such as the 2017 DREAM Act, or maybe even the Bridge Act, right? Because it offers them some sort of protection where there is none. But I feel we need to be very careful about doing that again, because shooting for the DREAM Act got us into the situation to begin with, into this immigration limbo. So I think that the energy needs to be directed at a more wholesome approach to have all of our people treated as human beings and not as an exploited class for this country.
And Juan, talking about the politics, what do you think of Republicans like Lindsey Graham or Paul Ryan or Orrin Hatch, for example, saying that DACA should not be ended?
Again, it's really frustrating because a lot of us are wanting more than DACA.
Right.
We've been wanting more than DACA for a while, and so it makes sense for the center-right to now be settling on DACA when we want a lot more.
Hmm.
Dean
Johnson, we only have 30 seconds left, but do you think that that's what people like Lindsey Graham, Orrin Hatch, and Paul Ryan, is that the message they're sending here by saying they don't want DACA to end, is that DACA's fine, but we're not going to go further?
I think that's possible. But I do think Lindsey Graham has been a supporter of the DREAM Act for a number of years, and he co-sponsored a bill earlier this summer. I'm less sure about Speaker Ryan, but I do think that DACA may look better to some Republicans than a more far-reaching program like the DREAM Act. And I think that we're going to see a real political tussle over the next few months about the future of immigration law and the treatment of the DACA recipients.
Kevin Johnson is Dean of the UC Davis School of Law and author of Immigration Law and the U.S.-Mexico Border. Eileen Truax is a freelance journalist and author of Dreamers, an Immigrant Generation's Fight for Their American Dream. And Juan Prieto graduated from UC Berkeley this May. He is a core member of the RISE program, Rising Immigrant Scholars Through Education program, and he's also a DACA recipient and continues to support students at Berkeley. Juan, Eileen, and Dean Johnson, thank you all for joining us.
Thank you so much for having
me. Thank you. It's an honor.
Thank you so much. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation with the nation's John Nichols about his new book, Horsemen of the Trump-ocalypse, a field guide to the most dangerous people in America. John Nichols says Trump has assembled a rogues gallery of crony capitalists, immigrant bashers, and climate change deniers. Who makes up Trump's inner circle, and how should they be challenged? That is tomorrow. Your Call is produced here at KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. You can also find us on iTunes. Thanks to Ellie Budner for producing today's show. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thank you for joining us.